You're listening to SBS News.
Renee Freeman caught COVID-19 2 years ago. She managed to get through the infection without being hospitalised, but today still lives with the effects. With no health conditions before this, she was surprised at the lingering impact on her energy levels.
I would work out 5 times a week. I would go to the beach. I would walk long distances once a week to have coffee with friends. This was a whole other life away from what I was used to. Basically, my daily battle is chronic fatigue. I will have good days where I can sort of get up at about 10 o'clock and sort of function normally. I'm still very tired, very sluggish, can't do a lot around my house. I've just gone back to work, so my body is really struggling with that at the moment.
A nurse, she was deployed from a home city of Perth to Melbourne in September 2020 to help treat COVID patients during a particularly intense second wave of infections linked to the hotel quarantine program. She says it's been a slow journey to learn to manage the chronic fatigue, which wasn't helped by a second infection in early August. If not for her knowledge as a nurse, she says it would have been difficult to cope. And she adds that many are suffering in silence.
I would like to see more emotional support because it's quite debilitating, like mentally. Your entire life is changed forever. 2 years, I'm still not the person I was, you know, when I went to Melbourne. And it's going to probably take me maybe another 2 years to get anywhere back to that. It's having somewhere in every state that we can go and they have a reference of doctors, medical professionals that are able to help us on every level.
In Tasmania, physiotherapist Scott Willis also caught COVID in 2020. It was during the state's first outbreak in March when he was being treated for a kidney infection at the Northwest Regional Hospital, the same place where two patients, it was later discovered, caught COVID from the Ruby Princess cruise ship that docked in Sydney. An active person, biking and swimming 5 days a week, he also noticed a lingering impact.
And then one day, I was in the pool swimming and just turned to do another lap and did about 4 strokes and felt like I was going to drown. I just lost all power in my arms and legs and had to actually hold on to the side. And that's where it all started. And I started thinking, this isn't normal. This isn't a normal occurrence of any type of, you know, post-infection. So that's when long COVID started to be investigated. I still can't do what I used to do pre-COVID. I still have some times of really fatigue, malaise, and even some times of some brain fog, especially if I've exercised for too long or high intensity.
Both of them use their health knowledge to navigate support services before long COVID clinics started appearing in March this year. First in New South Wales, then Victoria, the ACT, South Australia and Queensland. Western Australia and Tasmania are still waiting for a specialist clinic. Ms Freeman started a local Facebook support group to help others in a similar situation.
We just didn't have anyone to turn to or talk to. So I created the page that if anyone wanted to get on there and have a look or contact anyone that's been suffering in Perth.
In the absence of specialist services in all locations, GPs and their referral network have been the main way people have been able to get help. Scott Willis, who was appointed National President of the Australian Physiotherapy Association in January 2021, is also sharing his knowledge of navigating the symptoms of fatigue. He says there are gaps in service provision that need to be filled.
I think the gaps are still at the coalface. A lot of general practitioners don't really fully understand. And even a lot of allied health practitioners don't really understand a lot about long COVID. When patients come to a general practitioner, your GP or your physiotherapist or your occupational therapist or your psychologist, if they're not aware, then it's very hard for them to navigate the system and get the appropriate management that's required.
A federal parliamentary inquiry is looking at long COVID and the level of support services available. It will look at best practice responses in the prevention, diagnosis and treatment of long COVID or repeated infection, both in Australia and internationally. The committee has also been asked to consider the increased risk of various conditions, including cardiovascular, neurological and immunological conditions in the general population. Professor Brendan Crabb from the Burnet Institute in Melbourne researches infectious disease. He says a lot more is now known about long COVID, which has 200 documented symptoms.
I wouldn't call it a mystery disease anymore. The last 3 or 4 months in particular has seen a sort of tsunami of high quality information around what long COVID is. It's a spectrum of diseases, but it's effectively, you know, an organ damage to your lungs, to your heart, to your brain. In fact, a lot of that organ damage seems to be because of hyperinflammation. In other words, your immune system attacking and attacking and attacking tissues that it shouldn't be attacking over the long period of time. And even more interestingly is that there are other viruses in our body that are normally dormant in us. A lot of these are herpes viruses, things like chickenpox virus, varicella zoster, as we call it, or Epstein-Barr virus, EBV, or herpes simplex virus that causes cold sores. These are herpes viruses that live in a lot of us and they're normally dormant. In cases of long COVID, they're commonly reactivated. So we're starting to really understand the mechanisms of these syndromes, some of which neurological ones have been shown to last for more than 2 years. Once you understand the mechanisms, you can think about treatments and solutions.
Studies in Australia suggest the prevalence of long COVID in the general population is 5% of those who've been infected with the virus. That number would equate to more than 500,000 people. This year, 10 million Australians were infected with COVID-19. That's more than 20 times greater than for the previous 2 years. Associate Professor Linda Selvey at the University of Queensland is an infectious diseases epidemiologist and public health physician. She says much more needs to be done to limit the levels of virus transmission in the community, as well as boost the uptake of third and fourth COVID-19 doses.
Part of avoiding future long COVID cases is to try and limit transmission. We also need to be supporting people who do have long COVID, and I understand that there's a number of research projects happening at the moment trying to understand how to manage it. But we also need to be prepared for that as a society so that we can support these people into the future, and how long into the future we don't really know yet. But imagine if, you know, you suddenly can't work anymore or can't do the things that bring you joy. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. It's not to be taken lightly.
She backs the calls for an Australian Centre for Disease Control, similar to the US Centres for Disease Control and Prevention, to underpin a coordinated strategy to manage long COVID and prevent future disease outbreaks. It's an idea that the federal government committed to in its election promises. Federal Health Minister Mark Butler said he's committed to developing a national strategy for long COVID and looks forward to the findings of the parliamentary inquiry, which he helped to bring about. Disability groups have urged the federal and state governments to do more to ensure transmission levels are brought down through measures backed by the AusSage group of scientists, including better ventilation and retaining the wearing of masks. Craig Wallace, the head of policy at Advocacy for Inclusion, says for people with disability, including himself, it's been a difficult year. He's attended the funerals of people within the disability community who have died from COVID.
I'm attending a funeral of a beloved colleague and leader in the disability community who died of COVID and no other condition. So this is very real for us. And it's very clear that we're still in an ongoing pandemic situation which requires people with disabilities to be cautious.
He's reduced the risk for himself, his brother and mother, all of whom have weakened immune systems, by staying at home throughout this year. He says there needs to be better communication and leadership on the behavioural measures to keep in place to reduce the transmission of the virus.
None of us are calling for lockdowns to return, but what we are calling for is for there to be sensible precautionary approaches to this. For instance, we can ensure that the places and spaces that people have to go, like medical centres, are safe, that we're cleaning the air, that that we've got sensible uses of masking. What's concerning at the moment is we don't even seem to have a basic recognition that that is sensible.
Professor Crabb says the pattern of previous disease outbreaks provides useful lessons on what it will take for this pandemic to truly wind down in Australia.
The main lesson is it's pretty unlikely to just peter out. Develop the tools, use fantastic public health interventions in the meantime. You mentioned cholera before. We don't have a lot of cholera now because we drink clean water. We require our government to provide clean water for us. That's why we don't have cholera. These are legislated things. The lesson is, can we provide clean air in our public spaces in the same way as we provide clean water? Of course we can, and we should, and that would have benefits way beyond COVID, but through all of the airborne transmitted diseases. That's the big lesson here.
So far in Australia, 10.2 million people have been infected. Nearly 15,000 have died with it, and more than 1,700 people are being treated in hospital for the virus. Biwa Kwan, SBS News,